You have arrived at your destination.
Hey guys, before we get started, let me tell you about the most innovative approach to new music that exists today. Revival Recordings, an artist-first record label based out of North Carolina, has introduced Revival 52, a commitment to fans to release new music every Friday for all 52 weeks of 2018. From metal to pop punk to indie rock, Revival 52 will bring something new for you to enjoy every Friday. And right now, Revival is giving away a free Amazon Echo to one lucky fan once they hit 1,000 followers on their Revival 52 Spotify playlist. Just go to ffm.to/revival52 and follow the playlist to enter. Enjoy great music from your new favorite record label for free right now. Revival 52 on Spotify.
That's right, Wildlings. You wanted the best. You got the best. The hottest podcast in Louisville, Kentucky, the Sean vs. Wild podcast. I'm your host, as always, the man, the myth, the Sean Thriller Smith, the guy putting rad back into talk radio. And guys, it's time to rock and roll all night and podcast every Tuesday. Hopefully you guys had an awesome Memorial Day weekend. 3 days off in a row to recharge those batteries. 3 days off away from work. That's always great. Fun in the sun, you know what I'm saying? Hopefully you guys had the grills going. Hopefully you guys swam in the pool, took a dip in the pool, and hopefully you guys waited 30 minutes in between eating and getting in the pool, man, because you'll get cramps. And who wants that on Memorial Day? Let's be honest here. Guys, it was a hot one this weekend. It was very hot, as a matter of fact. I went up to the Indy 500. I was hanging out with Thor and Deadmau5 and, you know, Elio Castroneves. But I was the sweatiest guy maybe at the Indy 500. That was my claim to fame this year, guys. Very sweaty, very hot, and I came back looking rather red, like a lobster. So gotta love that, guys. I'm looking so cool here in the Smithsonian this morning. But yeah, guys, hopefully you didn't forget the reason for the season. Big shout out to all of those that have served or know someone that has served there in the military there. Thank you for keeping us free and all that good sort of thing. We definitely appreciate it there. Thank you for your service. And guys, I'm going to continue on with this America theme today on the podcast. I'm going to cut you off a slice of Americana. This week, I'm talking to Nick Dittmeyer. You guys know him from Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters. We're going to be talking about his form of Americana folk alternative country here, how he got interested in it. We're going to be talking about the backstory of how he got into music and stuff like that. We're going to be talking about our favorite parts of VH1's Behind the Music. It may be crass and crude at times, but you know what, guys? This is my show. If you don't like it, get your own show where you just talk about the good stuff about VH1's Behind the Music. And also, guys, you wanted it. You got it. I'm not going to disappoint you. We're even going to be talking about Suburban Blood Drive, the band Nick and I were in together over a decade ago. So yeah, we're definitely going to be hitting you with all that good sort of thing. You're not going to want to miss that. And yeah, guys, I'll tell you what, this is one of the cool things about this podcast. I want to give a big shout out to Nick because really Nick and I have not really talked maybe just a few times in the last decade or so. And when we came over to record this, you know, it was like we were old friends again. And afterwards, we just kind of have kept on texting each other and we send each other awesome YouTube videos of, you know, like Lit playing at an outdoor festival and Scott Stapp singing the national anthem somewhere. But yeah, man, it's like able to rekindle a friendship. So that's a cool thing about this podcast, man. Just one of the many reasons why I love it so much. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. And speaking of things that I love my sponsors and I got to be talking about them right now. How about Audible? Audible is going to give you a free 30-day trial of their service. You guys know them. It's an Amazon company. You get your audiobooks from them. And just for listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, you're going to get a free 30-day trial of Audible. Simply go to audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. Sign up for your free 30 days. And when you do, they're going to give me a little cash money that helps the show, that keeps the show going, keeps the lights on here at the Smithsonian, guys. And then also, too, big shout out to Audiophile Inc. Shane at Audiophile Inc. has got all of your screen printing needs taken care of, all the Sean vs. Wild merch, all the Uh-huh Baby Yeah merch, all the Suburban Blood Drive merch from back in the day that is still holding up. I've seen those shirts out there still. Tell you what, those are all printed by Shane. He's got some quality work, and he can do the same for you. Just go to audiophileinc.com and tell him the Wild Man sent you. Place your order for your t-shirts, your tank tops because it's so hot, your track shorts, whatever it is that you want. Audiophileinc.com has got you covered. AudioPhileinc.com. And again, tell him the Wild Man sent you. And also, big shout out, of course, to my producer, my good friend, Joseph Brock. He's going to be booping the dials this week, as he has done for almost 80 weeks in a row. I've definitely kept him busy, sometimes more than one episode a week. So, Joe, thank you so much for all that you do. Making me sound like $100 here. And guys, thanks so much for listening. Please like, share, and subscribe if you haven't. Tell a friend about the podcast. I'm trying to grow these numbers up big time. Refer a friend, man, if you enjoy it. Or you know what? Just shout out to me if you do enjoy it. Tell me what you like about it. I want to know that you're listening to these intros. But yeah, let's get some dialogue going. And I got a lot of free swag that I'm going to give away too. So maybe if you drop me a review, something like that on iTunes, I'll send some free stuff your way. Also, yeah, just hit me up, SeanVersusWild@gmail.com, or I'm also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. I'm on all social media platforms, so if you reach out to me, chances are I'm going to be getting back to you pretty quickly because I don't really have a big social life, not going to lie, outside of this podcast. So, yeah, again, thanks so much for checking it out. Guys, that's enough from me. Hope you had a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend. Now, let's get wild.
Yeah, before we get started, I have to crack open a cold Budweiser Select 55, you know, because sometimes you just got to watch your carbs. You know how it is, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever had Bud Select 55?
No, I haven't had.
I'll tell you what. Someone asked me, like, dude, how are they, man? I'm like, well, if you want to drink a lot of beers, not get drunk, and wake up with the worst headache of your life, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I assume it's pretty watered down tasting.
Like, oh, it's just water. Yeah, basically. Yeah. It kind of tastes like water and apple juice.
Yeah.
Like if you were to water it down even more, that's basically kind of what it tastes like.
Well, if you could weather 40 more calories, then you could just have like a Bud Light or a PBR or something.
Miller Lite, 96 cals, bro.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? You know, I got to do it for the low carbs. Got to keep my carbs in check. Yeah. Doing the keto.
Oh, you're doing keto?
Yeah.
Heard that makes you nuts, man.
Heard it makes you crazy. Well, even better for the podcast. Like you'll just see my slow decline into craziness.
Yeah.
As the episodes go by.
Yeah, I don't really know how it works. I know it has to do with like ketoacidosis. Also, is that what the
it's about being in ketosis? Yeah. So you basically eat like high fats and no carbs, or extremely low carbs, and you got to keep your protein in check.
Okay.
So basically, you just eat things that will probably make you thin, but also probably clog your arteries by the time you're like 45.
All right. So you could eat a Big Mac, but no bun.
Right. Exactly. Because that's where all the bad stuff lies. Right there in the McDonald's bun.
Or McRib. No bun. That's fancier. You eat with a fork and knife.
Yes, exactly. Oh, look at me. I'm going out for ribs. Were you going to Texas Roadhouse? No, I'm going to McDonald's. Yeah. I'm going to get the McRib. It's back.
It's back. So. They only do it a few times a year because it sells out so fast.
Yeah, it's a special occasion. It's like Christmas.
Yeah,
for fast food, you know.
But you know, there's a reason why they only do it once a year. Did you know the reason why they only do McRib once a year?
Why?
Because it like so like a research scientist. I think it was either Nebraska or Iowa State somewhere. He had a grant to like a corporate grant to use like pork products, like the snouts and the butts and everything. And so that's what the McRib is. And so they do it in the fall because that's when the pork prices are the cheapest. So it's the cheapest pork.
Plus, if you were to eat it all year round, you'd probably die.
Yeah, well, it's like got the fake bones in it too. You know, like it's supposed to look like ribs, but it's bones.
It's just ribbed for your dining pleasure.
Right. But I wonder if it scared people because, I mean, the McRib would have come out, I mean,
80s probably.
Yeah, 80s, 90s. Whatever it was going to be. And I just kind of wonder if people thought they were biting into bones, maybe. I'm not sure.
Oh, man, it's like a hot dog. It's like a rib-like hot dog.
Exactly.
You're going to love it, man. It's
like, you like ribs? You like hot dogs?
Wait till you try this. Yeah. It's going to be an unknown product, but it's going to be covered in barbecue sauce. So
yeah.
Much like the Z-rib at school. Do you remember the Z-rib?
Z-rib on bun. That's what it was read on the on the menu at school, like juice, fruit juice, or milk, or whatever.
Yeah, dude. If you were ever in Neumeier's telecommunications class, you'd have to read the lunch menu and like, oh, today, yeah. Z rib on bun, green beans, fruit or juice, cookie, and of course, milk.
Milk. I was telling somebody the story of the day about when I was in school. Like, I feel like I need to go through like a 12-step program for being an asshole. Like, and Rick Neumeier would be one person that would be the top of the list that I would apologize to.
Yeah, but the first person you call up. To
like, I didn't do drugs, I didn't do alcohol, I was just a fucking sociopath for a good portion of my life. And so, but I remember, man, at school, like in elementary school, we had field day and they told us that we were gonna have milkshakes at the after field day. So we got back to the cafeteria and all the lunch ladies did was just, they just froze milk, like white milk, like, and they just gave it to us with like a spoon, like just a, you know, and we were like, the kids just fucking revolted, man. Like, but it was bullshit.
It was a walkout.
Like, just shouting at the lunch ladies, you know, like a little mob, you know, of people.
Yeah, kids these days, they walk out for gun control. And kids those days walk out because you got frozen milk, not a milkshake.
Right.
False advertisement, guys.
That is kind of fucked up to do to some kids or anybody, to pass it off as a milkshake. That's just milk.
Yeah, why don't you just tell them we're going to have cold milk after your...
like frozen milk. Yeah. It's a school. We're poor. What the fuck are you going to do about it?
Hey, guys, after this field day, we'll have...
Freezing the milk. Yes, freezing milk.
You're going to love this. What a cool treat for such a hot day.
Right.
But, guys, this isn't just the school lunch podcast. This is also the Sean versus Wild podcast. And I'm sitting here with an old pal I cannot wait to catch up with. I'm talking to Nick Dittmeier. You guys know him from Nick Dittmeier and the Sawdusters. And you might remember a little band called A Suburban Blood Drive from back in the day. And Nick and I were both in it. And honestly, I probably haven't talked to you, really sat down and had a good face-to-face with you in about a decade.
Yeah.
So I'm stoked to make this thing happen.
Right on, man.
Thank you for joining me today, man. It's going to be like NPR. We'll just whisper into the microphone. But yeah, dude. So, for one, let's go ahead. Let's start with the Sawdusters, brother, because that thing is, you guys are picking up big time here. So, what have you been up to?
I've been living in a van for the last 3 or so years with, you know, up front, a band, country band. My singer-songwriter project called Nick Dittmeier and the Sawdusters, and we released like two EPs and then a full length, and then we've got another full length that's coming out in October. But we've just stayed on tour, like everything in the United States, basically east of Denver. We might have gone west further in Texas, but just basically that half of the United States. We haven't gone further west.
What are some of your favorite markets to play?
Well, we've hit Texas a lot, and I like Texas because the cities are just, you know, on I-35. I-35 goes from like Minneapolis, Minnesota to Mexico, and so there's like Dallas, Austin, Fort Worth, New Braunfels, Denton, San Antonio. All those cities are on 35, and there's just kind of a good infrastructure for bands, especially the kind of music we do in Texas, where for a small band that doesn't have much of a fan base in Texas at this point, for us to get in and showcase and actually be compensated well for it, you know,
right,
and be taken care of and feeling like what you're there to do is valued. I do like Texas a lot. And then we're headed to Colorado. I did a run through Colorado before. It's been about a year and a half and I'm excited to get there. And then we've had like a lot of luck in the like the northern Midwest, like super far upper Midwest, like Michigan and Wisconsin stuff. There's a lot of like appetite for Americana country music, you know, underground country music, and then also I like going to the rural Northeast. Like we've gone the back way through like upstate New York, Vermont, and those. It's totally different than like the coastal Northeast.
So. Have you ever made it up to Maine?
I've never gone that far. No,
that's so I'm missing three states. I would have. I've been to 47. Man, that math. It's the butt's like 55, bro. I'm blaming it on that. So 47 out of 50 states, Maine, Alaska, Hawaii, the only ones I've not been to.
Yeah.
So
Maine's scary though, dude.
Dude, Stephen King, brother.
Yeah, I've seen Pet Sematary.
I've seen Pet Sematary. I know what goes on in those roads.
Yeah, those rods.
It's a bad rod, Lois. Yeah. Dude, Texas is fantastic. I remember going there. We played South by Southwest there. Have you ever had an opportunity to do South by Southwest?
We've never messed with it, man, to be honest with you. I've never even submitted to Showcase for. I think I did years and years ago. But I mean, I know we can go play Austin whenever we want. So right. It's kind of like, I don't really want to go through the fight through the traffic. And yeah. All that kind of stuff.
I want to play Austin when everyone's there. I want to pay $400 to park 5 miles away.
Yeah. That's what I've heard. The parking is
yeah, it's abysmal, but we played, just talking about being very handsomely compensated for your work. We played, this place called, I want to say it was called I know exactly what it's called. The Chuggin' Monkey.
Okay.
So big shout out to the Chuggin' Monkey, Austin, Texas. We played there in 2014 was the first year we played, and like the whole place just kind of packed out when we were playing. It was loud. It was like, you know, we put on like a pretty big show, and the owner was just like, man, you guys are awesome. Like, here, have some drink tickets. Come see me whenever, you know, you run out. And this was at like noon, and literally we hit this dude up for drink tickets until like 10, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah.
And no, but we,
Central Time.
Yes, yeah, Central Time. Yeah. But yeah, we partied like it was nobody's business. And they just kept giving it to us, man. All those Lone Star beers.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Yeah.
So that's my jam. I got to have Lone Star or Tecate if I'm in Texas.
Yeah, I go Shiner, actually.
That's another good one.
You can get a lot of the ones they don't sell up here, too. They're, you know, Indiana's kind of limited with the Shiner, but...
Yeah, dude, they're holding out on it. Yeah. It's like the McRib, man. You can only have Shiner just at certain times of the year.
It's stingy. Yeah.
But, dude, let's take it back, because you've actually been one of the most requested guests on this podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That kind of makes me laugh.
So many people are like, you got to get Nick Dittmeyer, man. And a lot of people want to know what you're like, you know, they want to hear about all the good stuff, the old stuff, and everything that you're doing now. When I had Brian Whiteman from Emmanuel on the podcast, that was kind of like what sparked it. They're like, man, you had somebody from Emmanuel talking about Emmanuel. You got to have Nick. You got to have like, or Devin or somebody come up and talk about old times too. So I figure let's go ahead. Let's not focus on it, but let's just take a walk down memory lane.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't remember a lot. Like,
yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. Neither do I.
Well, just for the sake of where I was mentally, you know, like what was fueling a lot of my decision making, like not from a, I don't remember because I was drunk, more of a, I don't remember a lot of my motivations. I would put it that way.
Yeah. Not to mention, you know, here we are in 2018 and we're talking 2002 and 2003.
2004, 2005 would have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
But yeah. So, the super group, let's bring it back, man.
Okay.
Cause you know, for you, man, when I watch you play, I always think that you're like one of just the most well-versed, well-trained guitarists that I've ever seen play. Because I remember, you know, you're playing rock music and then more jazzy stuff and then heavier stuff. And then now you're doing like Southern and country and alt country and all this other kind of thing. But back in the day, I remember going to Devin's basement with Ryan Davis, checking out a new band called the Super Group. You, Devin, Pat, and some other guy that I don't remember.
Okay. All right.
And I remember hearing There Goes Your Juliet.
Okay.
Do you remember this at all?
I vaguely do. I don't know if any of those songs or CDs exist or anything.
I don't know if any of the CDs exist. I just happen to remember that song specifically.
I think it might have even been a tape, actually. I don't know if it even made it to CD format.
I think I got an MP3, which I think it was...
How long did it take you to download? like 15 minutes.
On a 21.6 modem. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Didn't even have 56K at the time.
Yeah.
And then we played, you know, back in my two for flinching days, we played with the super group many a time.
Yeah. So to give context to anyone listening, it was the very, very, very first band I ever played in. And I was 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that band later became like the kind of core of people were people that I just kept making music with into my early 20s that took on. Different, different types of music, I guess.
Different avenues, bro.
Yeah, yeah. We evolved together, and especially me and Devin evolved musically together. You know, I mean, I knew him since kindergarten. So we, you know, in I think 3 years, you know, we were in the same band together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys, I think you guys really helped each other evolve as far as the quality of your playing goes, because both of you guys are fantastic guitarists as well. And I feel like, did you guys have the same teacher?
Yeah, we did, actually. Okay. He was a professor at Bellarmine. So he was actually my dad's guitar teacher. He played for Marvin Gaye, and then he played with Howard Roberts, who is probably like the most recorded guitar player ever. Howard Roberts, like all the 60s TV theme songs, like the Munsters and stuff. So he actually had that dude's guitar. Howard Roberts started the Guitar Institute of Technology in L.A., and this dude was kind of like a disciple of Howard.
Too. Oh, that's awesome.
So, but yeah, we did. But like, I always wanted to be like a good guitar player because I thought like I had some spare time, and if I could get okay at it, it was one less person I had to hire to do it, you right. know, or find to do it. Like, even what I'm doing now, I mean, a lot of people in the genre don't want to take on doing a lot of lead guitar and singing, but like I kind of had to do it, you know. I felt right. like it eliminated a degree of risk.
It certainly makes yeah. it much easier. It certainly adds a total degree of convenience
correct,
to what yeah. you're doing. Because, like, you know, me as a drummer and me not really branching out and learning too many, you know, just kind of being able to kind of noodle around, if you will, on a guitar or something. Like, if I wanted to start a band and write songs, I wouldn't be able to write a song unless it was like, here's a drum part, and I'm thinking
right.
you're just going to come in with some shredding, you know, whatever. Like, all I could do would be to give notes, and I got to find somebody else to play the music.
Yeah.
So.
That would be a challenge, yeah.
Right. So that's why I do podcasting now.
Yeah.
Because now I just, for the same reason, it's so much more convenient where I just rely on myself and
yeah.
then get a guest to come in. But, yeah. you know, that sort of thing. And if I can't get a guest, I'll just talk to the listeners myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then from the supergroup became A Suburban Blood Drive. But you guys were kind of like, I don't know, like a rock jazz, kind of like, remember that band like Jazz June that was here kind
yeah.
of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
that sort of thing. And that's, again, 2004-ish, I would say.
Yeah. Well, no, it would have been way before that. Because I think I have to think about this all the time, but I graduated high school in 2003, so 2004, 2005 would have been like the Suburban Blood Drive people would have actually known.
Right.
So somewhere in that.
But that would be you, Pat Devin, and old Derek Arnold.
No, that would have been like me, you. Who else was
there? Well, I'm talking about in your jazz days.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So with
yeah,
old Derek Arnold. And then you guys became way heavier, and the Suburban Blood Drive that I think everyone knows and remembers. And, yeah. And then Cody joined the band.
Yeah, Cody. Fuck, yeah. I remember. Oh, I was trying to think who else played in that band.
Me, Devin, Cody, and you was basically the last formation of the group. And actually, I saw a video on YouTube. This is going to be hilarious. You just got to see it because... I was looking up some old ASBD stuff. We're all talking about it. We're having some beers over here at the Smithsonian. And I look it up on YouTube, and somebody is cool enough to have like uploaded some of the demos or some of the CDs and stuff that we had handed out, you know. Armageddon never really surfaced, but some people have that thing floating around on
yeah.
YouTube now.
Uh-huh.
And one of the videos is of Cody flying a plane.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's a pilot now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then, like, he's just flying a plane listening to Suburban Blood Drive. And then it's just like, fuck this room and everybody in it. And he's just, like, pointing to this lady that he's, like, flying. It's fantastic.
I don't think I've seen that. I'll have to look this up, man.
Oh, man. It was great. Yeah. It blew my mind. I'm like, I cannot believe this is online. I can't believe this is on the internet. But Cody Williams for the win on that one.
Wow.
And then Bodies, of course.
Uh-huh.
And I remember that from the See, that was kind of... that was like the MySpace period, because I remember specifically Bodies having a MySpace, and I remember listening to a couple tracks on like the EP that was on MySpace.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, dude. When was the last time you thought about that?
Well, I was in one of the guys that played in the Sawdusters that's not with us anymore. He actually got one of the CDs out of my basement and like listened to it and stuff and liked it and like showed it to some of his friends. So I don't think it's probably not horrible. It's probably, you know, tolerable. You know, I think it was last summer when I was doing some solo shows, and at night when I was driving and stuff, I was listening back to some stuff that I hadn't heard in a long time. And a lot of it to me, the heavy music and stuff that I liked then, I think holds up pretty well, you know? But I think it's not horribly embarrassing.
Yeah, know? I mean, it's
pretty solid, you know, for what it is.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than when you look back on some of the demos, like, and you're just, like, super embarrassed. You're like, oh, man. But the thing is everything that you do gets you to where you are now.
Right, yeah.
Of course, you know. Mm-hmm. What kind of music, just to kind of go off topic, and I'll get us back on topic, but, you know, you're talking about the heavier music that you listen to. Do you still listen to any of that anymore? What do you listen to now? Like, what's on your playlist now?
I don't really listen to very much heavy music, but I mean, I listen to a lot of like, I still like a lot of punk music and like 80s punk, you know, and then like a lot of like 90s stuff too. But I mean, my listening goes all over the place. Like today, what were we listening to? Like Loudon Wainwright III and then some Tony Joe White. Then there's the new Sarah Shook and the Disarmers record I was listening to. I'm trying to think what else we were listening to today, but. Like Los Lobos, I listen to them a lot.
I remember Los Lobos. Every morning, they would play a commercial for Rad Rockers Against Drunk Driving.
Did they really?
Yeah, so there was like a commercial that used to come on like the Fox 41 Kids Club or something okay. like that. Yeah. And it would just be for about Rad, and they would play La Bamba, and then all of a sudden, they like at the end, they would just go, this is Los Lobos for Rad.
Did they really?
Yeah, that's the first time I ever knew who Los Lobos was. And then I saw La Bamba, and then yeah. it was over with. So I was like,
yeah,
oh.
That was the only hit they have. The actual band doesn't really sound anything like that. Like, they're a really cool band. But, yeah, that was their brush with commercial success. But
well, they did the entire soundtrack to the movie, La Bamba.
And have you watched that movie recently?
Oh, my God. Yes, I have.
Okay. Because I have a very soft spot in my heart for those 80s, like, rock biopics. Like
oh, yeah.
The one with Dennis Quaid as Jerry Lewis.
Oh, Great Balls of Fire?
Yeah.
I love that. I have There's it on VHS.
Who does the Buddy Holly one?
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey's Buddy Holly.
Holly story.
And then there was some really good made-for-TV ones, like the Michael Jackson, or the Jackson story.
American Dream?
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved La Bamba, and yes, dude, and Isai Morales is so good. The guy that plays Bob, yeah. Richie's brother.
He's like, is that my first?
Or my last. Dude, yeah. The ultimate scumbag, Bob. If you guys want to see a classic, I don't know, just guy make terrible mistakes and be totally unapologetic about it, go and watch La Bamba.
Richie!
Richie! Dude, me and John Brayboy used to quote La Bamba like religiously.
Yeah.
So that was just like our movie that we always quoted. But yeah, I love that. They're like, Bob, I'm pregnant. He goes, that's okay. It's not my first or my last.
Yeah. And he's like shit-faced drunk, I think.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. When this is
or like whenever they're playing in Tijuana and they're like playing Oh Boy by Buddy Holly, he's just back on the drums going, oh boy.
Yeah. The band in the scenes where Richie's like up and coming like doesn't remotely really sync up or make any sense. But that's why the movie like Walk Hard is so good too, because it just accumulates all the weird stuff of – and even some weird VH1 – stuff too from like the 90s. They would do some biopics, like they do like a Rick Nielsen one. I don't know if you remember this one. It was really weird.
Yeah, or like Behind the Music. They'd always just
they're all on YouTube, actually, if you ever want to go down a dark.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah. I loved Behind the Music. That was my absolute favorite.
What was your favorite Behind the Music?
I would say personally, I would say maybe the Motley Crue one.
Because the part where he kills his friend.
Oh, my God. We're laughing about that.
He's like, Raz. He's like, I see Raz's sneaker. Whatever. What does he
say?
Yeah,
he's like, I saw Raz's sneaker on the side of the road. And,
I'm like,
and
then, bro, what happened?
Like, yeah. And then, like, Vince Neil's, like, trying to, like, fucking make excuses all the time. Like, he's just like, yeah, I was, like, shifting and, like, there was water. I'm like, it's probably because you were shit-faced plastered and going to the liquor store driving 100 miles an hour in a Ferrari or whatever.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, not to go on a dark tangent of laughing at misfortunes, but the Metallica Behind the Music.
Oh, God.
And you just hear Kirk Hammett go,
the black ice.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, oh, yeah, Jason, he says, like, I didn't see any black. Or, yeah,
James Hetfield.
James Hetfield, like, I didn't see any black.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, like, you just, Kirk Hammett's like, you could hear everyone screaming except for Cliff.
He's like, they lifted up the bus and then they dropped the bus back down on Cliff.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah.
Well, actually, my favorite, though, okay, so.
That got dark, but, also hilarious.
Well, dude, so Behind the Music, and because it was dark, pretty bottom of the barrel. Because you got to think about this. Like back then, in like you think about like, all the 80s metal Behind the Music, like there could be, I mean, the light could go off on your career like that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It went off for a lot of those people, you know, like the Quiet Riot one,
yeah, Kevin DeBrow,
yeah, who's dead now, died living with his mother. But like these bands fell on some really bad, hard times, you know, and they just, you know, but now even with the 80s hair metal bands, I mean, it's like that just doesn't happen the same way where you're just written off like within a year, you know,
right.
You're an arena or have a number one song. And then within an album or two, you're fucking finished, you know? My favorite one was the Lynyrd Skynyrd one, but that was just because I was, you know, 12,
right,
and a Lynyrd Skynyrd fan. But the Leif Garrett one where he meets the guy who he crippled.
Oh, my gosh.
He gets to meet him in a park. He's like, how you doing, man? He's like, how you doing?
And he's just like, dude, you saved my life. And he like got so much catharsis. Why are we laughing at the worst parts about the music? You know, it's like.
Oh, because, yeah, and Leif Garrett's wearing like a bandana.
Yeah, because he definitely.
Sweatpants, yeah.
Yes. Or I'm trying to think of some other highlights. Here's the most depressing highlight, not from Behind the Music, but from similar. You watched E True Hollywood Story, right?
I've seen a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, so like basically E True Hollywood Story, guys, if you don't remember what that is, it's like the Hollywood equivalent of Behind the Music. They talk about people that had promising careers, and then it goes on to hard times. But the one with Corey Haim. Okay, and like there's like a scene at the end, like they're just talking about what Corey Haim does now, and it's like Corey Haim is now working on his music, and it shows him like in this apartment that has no furniture in it on like a 25 key Casio keyboard, like just goofing.
But Corey Haim or Corey Feldman?
Corey Haim.
Okay, all right.
R.I.P. He's since left us as well. But like, it's just like, and he spends time working on his music, and he's just like fiddling on some keys on this small toy keyboard. And that was one of those scenes that always stuck with me. I'm like, oh man, that's hilariously depressing.
Yeah,
we're laughing at their misfortunes, but you know what? They had a life.
Yeah.
So. More power to him.
What are you going
to
do?
What are you going to do, guys? Hopefully we don't end up on Behind the Music. We'll end up on Behind the Music, and you guys can laugh at us, okay?
Yeah, you can laugh at my bit. But there was... Okay, so to kind of cut this off, though, there was Behind the Music, which was like a roll of the dice for whatever these people were like or what had happened to them or what they'd been through. Like, you know, there was a Ted Nugent one that talked about how gay kids weren't allowed at his bow and arrow camp or something.
Oh, my God, I make my own beef jerky.
Yeah, like that's like how edgy he is. And then but then they had the Legends series. So they'd like a Bruce Springsteen one, Grateful Dead. And those were actually really well-made music documentaries. They had a Led Zeppelin one, or like that kind of was the line in the sand for like certain acts. You know?
I also loved classic albums. The VH1 had classic albums. And basically they would just pick an album like Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'd have like Meatloaf this. In the studio, but they'd actually... you know, cue up the original tapes, and like he'll be at the board, like soloing some stuff. I'm like, oh, you could hear the drums in the keyboard part, and blah 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 blah, and like talking about how they did all that sort of thing. And that was kind of cool from like a production and just like from a music making standpoint. But yeah, VH1, man, we went down that rabbit hole big time.
Yeah, dude, I miss VH1 so much. Pop up video, and you know,
that's when it's good now.
Rock and roll
like
Jeopardy.
I mean, now I get it. Like you can get on YouTube and watch any video you want anytime you want, but. Sometimes it's nice to just have a show on that just plays videos at random, and you might find something new
right.
that you never would have imagined, and you had no choice but to watch it, or you had to get up and change the station. So,
yeah,
that is how it was, guys, back in the day. Now you have YouTube. You don't know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, and then also, too, just to get back on topic of music, because back when you were listening or when we were, you know, playing, like, in Suburban Blood Drive and, like, the heavier stuff, you and I were talking about how much we loved country music.
Yeah, we grew up on 80s, 90s country music.
Right.
And it's kind of funny, though, but it's like, now, you know, in Louisville, now there's, like, 103.9 or whatever. It's, like, there are 90s, they call it, like, true country.
Yeah,
whatever.
True
like,
country.
So that, a lot of that was... I mean, my parents just, like, you know, they, you know, had tapes and, you know, we're always listening to WAMZ or, you know, whatever.
You got to listen to 107.7, The Hawk.
You're a Hawk fan? I was more of an AMZ guy.
Oh, but, gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, I've always liked.
Well, also, too, at that time, country music was outselling rock and roll. I mean, Garth Brooks was the number one selling artist of the 90s.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Outselling Michael Jackson and everything else, the Titanic soundtrack or whatever, you know, whatever else huge.
Blues Traveler.
Yeah, yes. The Hook didn't quite bring it all the way back to number one. But yeah, so, but that's, yeah, I grew up with Garth Brooks, Travis Tritt, Randy Travis.
Yeah, Vince Gill, Alabama.
Yeah, been Shenandoah, Dwight Diamond Rio, Alan Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, and a good friend of mine, his name's, do you know Levi?
I don't know if I know.
He's got hair down to his ass. He's very metal. He was in Order of the Leviathan. Now he sings for God King. But you know, he's real into metal, but I told him I like country music, and immediately we bonded and like stayed over here. Like, he did a podcast, and then he just stayed over, and we just drank beers till like 3 a.m. mm-hmm. watching, you know, classic country on YouTube.
Yeah.
But it was great then. And I think that it's just now the alt music, and maybe this is just my opinion, but like alt music and indie stuff, people love the country music they grew up on, but they need something that isn't what country music is now. You know,
currently on the radio?
Is that right, yeah. Which is basically just like Southern rock, ultra produced with like, it's just basically pop music with like a banjo in it.
Sometimes, yeah. I don't know though, but like, you know, like Shania Twain, like in the 90s was kind of like that too, in a sense, you know, where like she was considered so pop and like it outraged a lot of people. But if you listen to a lot of those songs now, like they're pretty innocuous country songs, you know?
Yeah. I feel like a woman.
Yeah. But it was different kind of, you know, Def Leppard style production on some of those country songs. But
well, thanks Mutt Lang. You know, hey, here's a tidbit. The same guy that, you know, produced Shania Twain did produce Def Leppard.
True.
Yeah. And I think she married him. Did he not? Did she?
Yeah. He cheated on her.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Man, he pulled a Def Leppard on her, dude. I don't know about you, but I'd give my left arm to play drums in Def Leppard. Zing. Anyway, but hey, I'll tell you what. Since we're talking about country, since we're on a roll here, I feel like let's go ahead and give everyone a taste of the Sawdusters, and then we'll hit the Sawdusters hard on the second half of the show here. So you have prepared a piece.
Yeah.
He's here in studio right now, guys. You cannot believe the quality of this. We're going to drop in a song here, and let's see here. It looks like it's going to be Just My Job. Give everyone the deets. What's the background on Just My Job?
It was off our last record, and it's a song about like moral ambivalence, like having to do things that you kind of know are wrong, but you kind of are forced to do those things.
Like a mafia hitman?
Yeah, yeah.
Or just like going to work pushing paper all day.
Yes.
You know, like, hey, this office shit is dumb, but I better do it.
Yep.
So I can get that money.
Totally.
I feel that. I think anybody can relate to that. But yeah, let's go ahead and give it a listen, guys. This is Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters with Just My Job.
Now the coach has come at 4:45. Grab our gear. Head down in the mine. Job. Don't think about it much. Not clean the needles, not tighten the straps. I see the victim's family on the other side of the glass. I beat him his right. Took cash for his script of hydrocodones. Let's matter of time. She did what she did with the stuff. It's just her life. Don't think about it.
Everybody, that was Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters taking you to Toontown with Just My Job. You like that? Toontown?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I like Toontown.
I like that. I was a big Roger Rabbit fan.
Me too. Have you watched that movie recently? Like, gone back and watched it?
I haven't watched it recently. I probably watched it maybe 7 or 8 years ago was the first time.
I think it's still on Netflix. It's a good one. It holds up.
Oh, Bob Hoskins, dude.
Yeah, R.I.P.
R.I.P. Did you know that Bob Hoskins was the original first choice to play Wolverine in X-Men?
In the 90s?
Yes.
No, I didn't know that. That's odd.
It's pretty crazy. But yeah. Apparently, well, like Wolverine in the comic books is like 5 feet tall and like real gruff.
Oh, okay.
So like Bob Hoskins is like got a short, stocky build. And yeah, but instead they went with some guy named Hugh Jackman. And maybe you've heard of him instead. But yeah. And we had a great conversation while we were on the break about how much we, how heated we can get at fast food.
Yeah. No, I try not to get.
Yes, basically.
I try not to be.
Yeah, and Hardee's being, we also came to the conclusion that Hardee's is definitely the worst if you're in a hurry and you want to get
It's the
fast
bottom
food.
Of the barrel fast food restaurant because they do the hamburger with the hot dog and the chips on it too. Have you seen that one?
No.
They do it in the summer for 4th of July. They call it like the All-American Burger.
Dude, they put a hot dog on the burger?
Well, they cut it. They slice it down the middle.
They bisect it.
And then there's like Lay's potato chips on it.
What to you? What is the best fast food? If you had to pick, like if there's like one burger or one thing, and you're like, this is probably going to be my number one fighting champion in a tournament of burgers.
I probably In-N-Out. That's what I would go with. But it's also a point of the fact that I only get to eat it like a couple times a year.
Yeah, so it's special. So,
yeah, where normally you're kind of forced into eating fast food.
Yeah. To me, the Dairy Queen flamethrower burger is my champion burger.
Is that limited edition?
Oh, no. It's not limited edition. It's an everyday treat.
Okay. I never think to go to Dairy Queen anymore, really. I don't know why.
Dude, their burgers are fantastic. And the flamethrower is like, oh, we're going to put like pepper jack cheese and then the spicy like Thousand Island on it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might be paying for it later, but you're going to love it when the time comes to eat.
Yeah, well, that's an excuse to get a blizzard with it, too.
Yeah,
have
exactly.
A hot eating a cool treat, you know.
Speaking of fast food, so, guys, we were talking about how fast food, sometimes you go places and it takes forever. The other day, I went to Dairy Queen. I was having, like, a little cheat day. So I was like, I'm going to get a blizzard because it's my cheat day and I really want ice cream. And I go there and I order a blizzard and I had to wait, like, 5-6 minutes in line. There's like 3 or 4 cars in front of me. And this guy's like, man, I'm really sorry about your wait. Here you go. And he handed me like 5 coupons for free blizzards. And I was like,
whoa, that was an investment.
I know.
Time investment. Yeah,
exactly. So I was like, wow, now my cheat days are covered. I get free blizzards anytime I want.
One thing I hate if you're in a dysfunctional customer service environment, like a situation that just kind of rolls up on you. Like, you know, you walk and then you realize is the people in line, like, or the people waiting with you, try to get you to form a, like, a tribe, like a hate tribe against the people working, and to, like, look at everything they do and be like, now they're getting ketchup, now they're getting nip, you know, like,
oh yeah, it's about time,
it's about time, like, they, you know what I'm talking about, like, they want this this cheer section of assholes, and they try to
I refuse
to participate in that, man.
Now you're going to drop fresh fries. I see how it is.
Right. Like, oh, he gets his food now. You know, like.
Yeah, I've been waiting here for 5 minutes, man. This guy ordered after me, and he's already got his food.
And he got his flamethrower.
Yeah, he got his flamethrower. And it's like, well, yeah, dude, you're ordering like 15 designer items.
Yeah.
And this guy just ordered one thing that was probably sitting back there and not good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do want to form that allegiance.
Yeah, it's a dark allegiance, man. Like a relationship that lasts until the main guy gets his food, and then it just falls apart.
That disperses.
It was like the Bulls when Jordan retired for a year. Yeah, they had Pippen, they had Longley, they had Rodman, but without Jordan, they were just barely a playoff team.
They weren't going to peat.
They were not. Yeah. And so when I was a kid, I was at a Taco. Remember when the Taco Bell was on 10th Street and Jeff, like where the CVS is, there's a Rite Aid there now. It was like old Taco Bell, the one that looked like the Haciendas.
Oh, yeah.
So I had this friend, and his dad didn't give a shit about like anything, and he would just like drop us off places. So he drops off at the Taco Bell on 10th Street and just like left. And so we're in there. It was, as a kid, it was awesome. But I remember there was like a truck driver, like his like big rig was outside, and we're sitting there eating, and he gets his food, and then, you know, he's like, oh, finally, motherfucker, you know, or whatever. Walks out. Kicks the door with his boot to like be dramatic, a dramatic exit, and he just shatters the glass like with his boot and then just keeps walking. And I mean, my friend, we stand up on our chairs, we're like, yeah, and then the employees are like, shut the fuck up, you know. And we just sit back down and
enjoy our Bel Grande
Mexican pizza. I don't know why I remember that, but yeah,
dude, that's great. Speaking of people that would just don't give a shit and would just drop you off. My dad took me, my sister, I'll never forget this. So I'm like, I'm probably 3 years old, maybe, 3 or 4, whenever Gremlins 2 came out, guys, cause this is going to be the big thing in the story. So I'm like, you know, 4 years old. My sister is 7. And then like my cousin Ryan and his sister are a couple years older. So the oldest one of us is maybe 9. You know, 10.
Yeah.
And he takes us all to the movies, and him and his girlfriend at the time drop us off at the movie theater, and we all go see Gremlins 2 together, except they leave and go see another 48 Hours. And so, like, there's 4 of us, the oldest one being, like, 10, and we went and saw Gremlins 2. And it's like, have you ever seen 4 kids scared to death? Like, I mean, there's, like, this huge, like, spider gremlin and, like, all this stuff, and it was just, like, super frightening experience. But yeah, speaking of,
did your dad, did he run for political office in Clarksville?
He did.
Did he win?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay. What did he run for?
I think something like a record, and maybe not recorder, but a city council.
Okay. Okay. Cause I thought I'd never seen the signs. I think he put Diamond Dave on.
He did.
On the signs. Okay. Yeah.
Shout out to Diamond Dave. You'll get him next year.
You should give him a spot.
You'll get him next year.
You should get him to sponsor the show.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad, can I borrow a few bucks?
Would you like to pledge a message of support? That's the way you should frame it.
Exactly. Would you like to, you know, contribute to a great cause, like your son's financial future? But yeah. Anyway, guys, welcome back here to the show. I've got Nick Dittmeyer sitting down with me. We are having a great time catching up here. And yeah, so basically where we left off before the break, we're talking about Nick getting into country music and how much we loved it here. And also, guys, I know I didn't mention it earlier, but Nick had a huge project, Slithering Beast, back in the day. Yeah, did you like that? The bass on the spring of that mic stand.
Yeah.
It's going to make for great audio.
Yeah.
So yeah, Slithering Beast.
Yeah.
Dude, hit us with it.
It was a project I started in the bedroom at my parents' house when I was really depressed, and when I was like 21 or 22, and I just started writing songs. Because the thing about playing in bands, especially in heavy bands, is that you really need all the people there, you know, like, and a lot of the music is really specific, like country music or blues or like, you know, rockabilly or jazz, those types of music, like there's kind of a foundation to fit in, like where if you're a good enough player within that genre, you can kind of show up and, you know, fumble your way through or be really good you know, there is kind of some rules with it. But with heavier music, it's harder because there aren't like typecast chord progressions,
right,
you know, in all of it. So when I had personnel, I had a lot of personnel problems. And so I wanted to do something that like I could really rely on myself with. Because with country music or folk music or singer-songwriter type stuff, you can – it can have several like versions of itself and still be pretty close. Like I can go out and play a solo show or like a duo show or a full band show, or we can actually play full band and maybe strip things down a little bit. And it's the same, the audience will get, oh Jesus. Sorry.
It's cool guys. We're plucking a little bass guitar here.
people will get the point across of what the musicians are trying to do. In heavier music, you can't do that. And that for me was really limiting. And another reason why I really felt like the need to move on from a lot of heavy music was, you kind of like you're 21 or 22 and you're like, where are the older people? Like, you know, like they'd kind of drop off, you know?
Right.
And I felt a need to like maybe do something that could set me up because I knew I wanted to keep playing music and I needed to kind of do something that I could do for the long haul.
Right.
Really. And so, I did that for like 6 years. And then, the reason I got out of that was because like I was doing a lot of solo shows and trying to go out and tour more. And I think if you're gonna, and this was in my experience anyways, and this has stayed true pretty much, you know, the last few years, is that if you want to go do a project, like it's probably best for you just to go do it. And then try to get people to follow you to do it, you know, and then that's the proof that like this is going to happen, like this is happening. And the touring that I'm doing now, it's kind of like out of that too, where like I think there's a general nature for people to follow somebody maybe,
right,
and for them to lay that foundation down of and kind of set a precedent for the way things are going to be.
Well, and also too, I mean, you're putting in all the work, you're writing the songs, you're making it happen. And, you know, even if there's no band, you're still making the shows happen. So
yeah, there can be an appropriate medium to do that, you know?
So it's kind of a natural progression that from Slithering Beast, you just decided, hey, I'm going to be Nick Dittmeyer.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to form my band.
Yeah. And it was like, I was doing a lot of solo, getting offered solo shows and other stuff too. And it was like, well, it's Nick Dittmeyer from Slithering Beast. And I was like, it feels like a lot, a mouthful, you know, like to kind of explain to people where it was just better just to put my name on. So like the first EP I did was just Nick Dittmeyer. And then actually the first two were just that. And then the way the Sawdusters kind of came out was I did start to have a permanent band of like guys. And it was, the band that did the last full length. And so we were kind of just doing it under the name, the Nick Dittmeyer band, but I wanted a Nick Dittmeyer and those. And so the Sawdusters was the bass player at the time's dad actually pitched that name, and like it felt appropriate. Like we actually used to practice in a wood shop.
Right.
It kind of has like a blue collar ethos to it, you know.
Right.
It's digestible enough, but
and I feel too, it's one of those things where when you hear Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters, like you pretty much will, if you saw that on packaging or you saw it on a flyer, you already have an idea in your head of what it is that you're going to get, what the contents of the package are. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So. It's not, you know, it wouldn't be if you were like Nick Dittmeyer and the Wolverines. I'm like, what is this? Like some sort of
some howling?
What is this? Is this a rock and roll group or what is this? You know,
yeah.
With Sawdusters, I think you know what you're going to get.
Yeah, hopefully. You know?
So, but yeah, I think that's a good idea. And it's one of those things too, you know, with Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters, if you go and you play a show, it's just Nick Dittmeyer, people aren't going to be disappointed. You know, like, you go see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and it's just Tom Petty, you know, you'd be fine with it. But if you went to go see, or like Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band and it's just Bruce Springsteen, you'd be like, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But maybe if you go see like, you know, Motley Crue and it's just Nikki Sixx strumming a bass guitar, you'd be like, man, this is lame.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so.
So there you go. You made it happen. Oh, man, dude, this microphone is really tripping you up, guys.
It is.
Dude, this is like one of the things in podcasting, bro. You got to be aware of your surroundings at all times. But yeah, so, and the Sawdusters, man, I mean, you guys just are really doing big things. I just saw your record out at Guest Room Records just the other day when I was over there. And,
where was it in the store?
In the section with the local stuff and like Eastwood Records and all that good sort of thing. So,
oh, okay.
But how did you guys, so you're putting out, Here, I just did it too. But you're putting out music on Eastwood Records. Tell me about those guys, because they seem like they're really doing a lot of cool stuff. How'd you get hooked up with them?
With Wes, the guy that was playing drums in our band at the time actually had a record deal with Eastwood. And so what they've done, so the record had it come out in January, and then basically what they did is we contacted them about a vinyl release. So they took over the vinyl aspect of it, and they took over all the CD inventory, basically. So we are going to put full-on partner with them for our new record, but it was basically the way that it came to be was we were just looking for a label that was interested in doing it, that release on vinyl. Is how it came out. So,
are you a vinyl collector at this point in your life?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
I like vinyl. I mean, I think maybe its popularity is a little overblown, you know, and but I personally like it. And then I like, you know, I like finding records that you are only going to get on vinyl. Like, I actually went to Guest Room like Monday, and they had this big shipment in from like a bunch of like bluegrass from some obscure like East Tennessee label from like the 60s, you know? So, I mean, you can't, it's, you know, there's new stuff available just based on that format alone.
Yeah. And I agree. And plus too, like, for me, I finally got into vinyl. At first, I was like, oh, vinyl, everybody likes it, I get it. I was like, I have a Laserdisc collection, you know. Forget vinyl, I'm going next level. But I finally succumbed to the vinyl thing just because, you know, it's like, for one, it's just like all the music comes out digitally or like on vinyl anymore. And it's like, I get so tired of, to me, digital music, I like it. It's convenient to listen to digital music, you know, when you're in your car and like, or you got your headphones in or whatever. That's super convenient. But I don't want to buy something digitally. Like, I have Spotify. I can just stream it, you know? So when I want to buy something, I want something tangible. I want like something that I can hold in my hands, and I just like it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I like to see an album cover that's 12 inch by 12 inch instead of, you know, just looking at a JPEG.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's why vinyl has resurged so huge in like the last few years. It's just because people got tired of just like just having digital stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you buy an album off iTunes and then your phone resets and then you got to go buy it again, you know, or whatever. You get a new phone, you switch to Android. You got to go buy it again, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then, but I think in that same way, like people still do buy CDs. We actually sell CDs. I mean, sometimes people just want, you know, to own something physical by the artist in a way too.
Especially at a live show, it's the souvenir that you get from seeing the show.
Right. Yeah. So, that's the way the way we got to do 180 gram splash vinyl, you know, which is pretty cool. You know, the streaming's where it's at. I mean, Spotify is a good product. It's a good service. And I have like the premium one too. But the only thing is, like, I just think, what is it, like $10 for the premium or something? Or
right, $10 a month.
Yeah, it's just this, just too, it's too cheap, man, you know, to pay anybody. Like, for royalty wise, it's just not enough. That it needs to cost more. And, you know, and those companies too have lobbied Congress to pay even less royalties than what they're currently paying too. So it's like, you know, I'm all for it. I think it's awesome. I think it works, but they need to charge more for it.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that, like, for your Spotify royalties, you get something like, and it's either 0.0 or 0.0016. So it's either like 0.016 or 0.0016 of a cent per play.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at the math, because I mean, we had a song that was on an official playlist, like a Southern Rock playlist, and so we were getting like, you know, like 1,000 plays a day, something like that, and it's never translated into very much money, but actually it has helped pay for things while we've been on tour, like some of those royalties. But I mean, if that's the model we're gonna go to, then I think then the consumer is going to have to pay more. The product is just too good for $10. That's all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah. See, that's what we had. Cause like, we had like songwriting royalties and stuff. Like when you do your publishing or whatever, you get it all set up, and I would get a check for like $200 every once in a while, you know, or $150 every once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, but I do love Spotify, and I have Spotify Premium. So I'm all about it. Sean vs. Wild is on Spotify, guys, so don't act like I was talking down about it. I'm just saying I like to have records. So what's your favorite record that you bought recently?
What do I listen to? I go through my collection and I'll pull something out too that maybe got kind of ignored.
Right.
Or something in the collection. But I was listening to Quicksilver Messenger. I think that was the last. I kind of had to bury it and then pulled out this Quicksilver Messenger record that I like. But I've got some weird stuff too, like some weird records. And like, I think the most valuable one I have is like a Rob Disney's Robin Hood. It's like a rare one that somebody gave me.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I looked it up and it was like a rare pressing of this Disney
soundtrack.
Yeah, which it's like my favorite Disney movie anyways. But
yeah, and who's the guy that does the soundtrack too?
Roger Miller.
Yep. Yeah. Can't roller skate in a buffalo herd.
Yep. Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Sound advice. Guys, let that be a lesson to you. But yeah, so what's coming up on the horizon there for the Sawdusters? I know probably by the time that this podcast comes out, you will be on the road. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to listen to this podcast on the road. That'll be good. But what do you got coming up, say, like, you know, in June and beyond?
We're doing rush shows to Colorado and then down through Texas and then coming home and then... we just got some regional stuff, some festivals, and then we're going to Europe for a month, and then we're putting a record out. That's the plan. So October 12th is when the new record's going to come out.
So what's the, so you got a new record, it's coming out, it's October 12th, and it's called All Damn Day.
Yeah.
You're telling me about. So what are some of the themes behind the record, or have you already recorded it? Is it already in the can? Or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's done. It's not like we don't have the final masters of it, but all the tracking is done and we've got some mixes that are not 100%, but pretty close.
What can people expect from this record?
Well, like, it's good. We went up to Indy and did it. We tracked for about 8 months off and on with these two producers and they have their own studio. And then I didn't, like, it's kind of weird. Like, we didn't play a lot of these songs live. And some of them we haven't really even played live together out, some of these songs. So it's been kind of a different process. Cause I used a studio drummer on it versus the normal Sawdusters drummer. And I didn't write the record. I didn't, like, sit down and write the record specifically, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of these were songs that I had. And I was like, well, I think this song is going to work. I was like, I think this song is going to work. I think, you know, and then they all kind of made sense collectively, you know, together. But it wasn't, I mean, some of them, when I went in and started tracking, I was thinking, well, I might not use this song.
Right. But you might as well just lay it down.
Yeah.
The thing is for me is, and I'm sure you're probably this way too. Sometimes the songs that you're like, we'll lay it down. We'll see how it turns out. And then some of those become like the big gems of the record. Yeah, cause you're like, oh man, this is way better than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And then some songs you're like, you think is maybe the strongest song on the record. And once you kind of get in and really hear it outside of your head, you know, it's not,
doesn't have the pizzazz.
Doesn't have the pizzazz.
You know what I'm saying? It's floundering on the pizzazz. So, yeah. Well, that's cool, man. And like, what are some of the themes or whatever, in your lyrics or anything, going on this record?
A lot of death. You know,
way to really bring those people. They're going to love this, guys. It's all about death.
Like, I don't know. There's just been a lot of people, you know, over the last year or two die, you know, that I've known. So it's some of that, you know, and then writing wise, you know, taking, you know, I do walk, you know, I walk and like try to train my mind to be observational.
Right.
To be aware of things.
Would you say this is a more personal record for you?
Maybe, yeah. I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah.
You know, I could use some words. I like, you know, some words and songs that I don't, you know, normally. I dropped the word morel in like a morel mushroom in
nice.
A song. Yeah.
I've been dropping some mushrooms, dude, yeah. During the recording. I couldn't remember it, brother. Well, that's awesome, man. I look forward to checking it out. And guys, you definitely should too. That's going to be coming at you in October. You said you're going to go to Europe too, man. I got to backtrack, dude. What, have you been to Europe yet?
Mm-mm.
Are you stoked or what?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be there for a month. It was an agency that came to us about it. You know, so we've got it all ready to go. And, It's just Belgium and the Netherlands for, you know, that. And hopefully there'll be something we can go back and do, you know, over and over, really.
You know, I have some friends in the band Quiet Haulers.
Yeah, I know those guys, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, dude, they clean house in Europe.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think that the kind of the alt country, the folk music is really hot, like really hot over there, mm-hmm. you know, especially in the clubs and stuff like that, the more American Americana sound. So mm-hmm. I hope you guys just kill it, man. I hope you drink huge beers out of a big glass shaped like a boot.
Do they have it?
Oh yeah, dude.
Okay.
So
did you see that in a movie? Or
no, man, like Beer League or Beer Fest or the Oktoberfest in general. Like, you know, you drink beer out of a stein or out of a glass boot.
Okay, I'll do it.
Just for me.
I promise.
I'll get a text at, like, you know, 4:30 a.m. and it's just you with a boot going up. Fantastic, dude. Well, as we're winding down here, as we're riding off into the sunset, where can people find Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters on the internet?
On iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Bandcamp, anywhere music is sold.
Anywhere music is sold, brother.
Yeah.
If you want to go down to Best Buy or FYE, you go ahead and get it there.
Yeah. No. Is that a thing still?
Best Buy, I don't even know if they carry CDs anymore.
Okay.
My favorite, as a kid, I always used to get CDs at Circuit City.
Yeah, they actually had the deals at Circuit City.
Yeah, because you could get a CD there for like $7, or most of them were like $9.99. And, like, the most expensive ones were, like, $12.99.
Yeah, because if you went to, like, a Sam Goody or Disc Jockey.
I'm going to Camelot Music.
Camelot Music, yeah.
How much is this CD? It's $45.
Yeah, dude, it was expensive there. No wonder they went out of business.
Exactly, and you should.
Yeah.
Price gouging like that to the children. They're just trying to get their Metallica records.
Yeah, live. They're in copper.
We're trying to get Load and Reload over here, dude.
Do you believe that it was supposed to be a double album, or you think that was just like a lie Metallica told people?
Dude, if it was a double album, like, fine, but I don't know. It just seems like it was, to me, it was like, when the 80s bands that I love so much, the 90s were such a hard time for them because they wanted so much to be like, oh, dude, we'll be like Nine Inch Nails, or we'll be like kind of industrial, or we'll be kind of like the alternative rock or whatever. And I think Load and Reload are like fine. I think that they would be held in lower regard had Metallica not put out dog shit for the rest of their career.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But it's like, I went and was rewatching Some Kind of Monster a couple months ago, and it's like, these are
so good.
Oh dude, it's a great movie. And it's like these millionaire middle-aged guys who have everything that are trying to make like totally angry music, and it's just like painful to watch them. They just don't have it in them, man, you know. And like, it just doesn't look fun. They argue about Hawaiian shirts
and their
therapist is in their writing sessions. It's like, dude, just stop. Like,
the part where Lars Ulrich is screaming frantic tick 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 talk and then screams talk at the end, I get so embarrassed secondhand, like I can't deal with it. And there's a lot of cringeworthy parts in Some Kind of Monster. Guys, if you haven't watched it, go back and check it out. And like, he's like painting these like elaborate paintings that like aren't that great.
And it's weird, Lars's dad, the old man, Father Time looking guy. Yeah, they're like, no, but you know,
Father Claus.
Yeah, he was like, Lars, this is not a good heavy metal.
Exactly.
But actually, I thought Jason Newsted like looked like the most sane member of all of them, but he's the guy that fucking quit. You know, like,
probably because he was the most sane.
Yeah,
member
he was like, dude, he made, you know, he made so much money off the band. It's like, dude, fuck all this, like, you know, anymore. There's got to be a point though with music that walking away. It's almost like shows that like you really like that go on for too long,
right?
Like Parks and Rec or something like that. And you're just like, dude, you could, you know, because people get sad about certain shows that are canceled, like Freaks and Geeks or, you know, something. But it's like, yeah, but the brevity of that
is what makes it special.
Is what makes it special. The fact that they don't, it's not like How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
They make like 14 seasons of it, and they don't, the whole plot of the show is in the title, and they just ditch it. You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
You know,
dude, the biggest thing for me was like, I used to watch Community all the time.
Okay.
And like Community was like, it was on TV, and then it got canceled, and then like, I think Hulu or somebody picked it up, and then it got canceled again. And then it like went to like Yahoo, like Yahoo, like did some sort of service, And by the end of it, it was just like so shitty, and like you couldn't get it because
they sold
like,
Chevy Chase doing it.
No, like everybody, most people had already left.
There's only a couple still on it, like the Indian
I think
guy.
That I think basically it was like Britta and so like the girl with the blonde hair, mm-hmm. and then Joe McHale, the main character. I don't even know. But
well, isn't community college supposed to be a short time anyways, you know, like 2-year degree? Exactly. Every season we're getting milk out of this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, the ones that just keep going on and on. Or like, imagine like a show like Family Matters, like it used to just be a show about Carl Winslow's family. And then by the end of it, it's like Steve Urkel's turning into Stefan Urkel and marrying Laura at Disney World. And
is that what happened in the show?
Yes.
Okay.
And then like they, you know, shrink Carl to like the size of like, you know, whatever. Like these are real episodes. Like it started out as like a working man's like Cosby or something, you know? Yeah, totally. And then it turned into like, oh, me and Steve are on the smooth juice. And then we're turning into Stefan Urkel, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I remember he would get in a machine.
Yes, he would.
Yeah.
And turn cool.
Yeah, because I was reading an interview with
Jill
White, and like, it was an AV Club article, and like, I don't think he even tries anymore. Like, I think he just quit acting. He was like, dude, I'm the most successful black child actor of all time. He's like, I don't even care.
Yeah. Why would you? Like, he probably just lives off of his millions.
Yeah.
And laughs all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, because you can get the point of popular, whether it's a sitcom or like almost like Macaulay Culkin or somebody like that, where, you know, you can get to the point where you're just so successful at one thing in a show to the point where you can't really do anything else. You'll just be known as like that guy from that thing.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. If I were Jahlil White, I'd be like, dude, Jahlil, did you just buy another Ferrari? And I would just be like, did I do that? You know, got any cheese?
Got any cheese? Yeah. But man, Yeah, fucking Family Matters. Yeah,
dude, that's what it's all about. Family matters, and let that be a lesson to everybody. Family matters. So make sure you hug your loved ones and all that good sort of thing. But yeah, let's go ahead and get out of here before we overstay our welcome. Before we go into our smooth juice, Stefan Urkel seasons of the podcast, guys. If you like what you heard today, definitely check out Nick Dittmeyer and the Sawdusters online. They're everywhere and anywhere music is sold. And then also you can check out my podcast, SeanVersusWild.com. It is also on Spotify. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you enjoy your podcasts. It will be there. So Nick, it's great catching up with you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being on the show, guys. Thanks for listening. And this has been the Sean Versus Wild Podcast.
Thank you for listening, DNN.